Have you ever found yourself maybe trying to understand something really complex by first figuring out what it isn't? It's a bit like trying to find your keys, you know? Sometimes the fastest way is just to rule out all the places they definitely aren't before you kind of zero in on where they might actually be.
That makes sense. Process of elimination.
Exactly. So today we're doing just that. We're taking a close look at addiction, but, well, from a really unique perspective, defining what addiction is not.
Okay.
Our mission here is to get a clearer understanding of this really challenging subject, not just for people directly affected, but honestly, for anyone looking for insight into human behavior and, you know, the potential for change.
Yeah, that's important.
And the insights for this discussion, they come from Another Look, which is just an incredibly thoughtful piece of literature from Narcotics Anonymous World Services, Inc. It offers a fresh, really impactful lens to see addiction through, drawing on both, well, deep personal experience and a broader understanding.
It's a powerful approach, definitely. Because, look, there are so many ways people think about addiction, define it.
Right.
And naturally, there's a lot of disagreement out there. You know, some definitions just seem to fit certain experiences better than others.
Sure.
So if we can kind of accept that variety exists, then maybe, just maybe, finding a more, let's say, basic and universally valid viewpoint could help us all communicate and understand each other a bit better.
Okay.
The central idea here really is that by agreeing on what addiction isn't, what it is might just pop out with much greater clarity for everyone involved.
Okay, let's really unpack this then. The material we're looking at suggests some key points that maybe surprisingly most people can agree on, and it starts with a really powerful one. Addiction is not freedom.
That definitely grabs your attention.
It does, right? And it might sound ironic to some people. We often hear addiction framed as, well, a choice. But the very nature of this illness, its symptoms, they paint a starkly different picture.
Totally different.
People caught in addiction, they often value personal freedom intensely. Maybe precisely because they experience it so rarely as the illness gets worse. It's like wanting desperately to run a marathon, but you find yourself stuck in a perpetual three-legged race.
Yeah.
With yourself.
On
flu. You're moving, sure, but you're constantly fighting this invisible tether, completely unable to actually choose your own path.
That analogy of the three-legged race, it really hits home. It captures that feeling of being hampered, right?
Yeah.
And what's fascinating, the source highlights how even when someone is, say, abstinent for a period, that feeling of true freedom can still be really curtailed.
How so?
Well, the individual is never quite sure if any action they take is really based in a conscious desire for continued recovery, or if it's maybe some unconscious, subtle wish pulling them back towards using.
Okay. That internal conflict.
Exactly. There's this constant, exhausting internal battle. The person tries to manipulate situations, control all their actions, not out of strength, though, but out of this deep-seated fear. And in doing that, they completely destroy spontaneity, which, like you just said, is such a fundamental mark of real freedom.
So that need for control, where does that come from?
It really springs from a profound fear of losing control. Based on past failures, disappointments, you know, this fear actively stops them from making genuinely meaningful choices. Choices that could, paradoxically, actually remove the very fear that's blocking them in the first place.
So it's like being trapped in this loop where the desire for control actually leads to less control, not more. Is that it?
Precisely. The routines of active addiction become, well, monotonous, imitative, ritualistic, compulsive, obsessive.
Yeah.
They strip individuals of the capacity for responsive or, you know, truly meaningful thought and action. Think about it. Personal growth, totally the opposite, right?
Right.
It's defined as creative effort, purposeful behavior. It assumes choice, involves change, and it demands the capacity to face life on its own terms. All those essential elements of growth, they're just utterly stifled by the grip of addiction. It just doesn't allow for them.
That makes so much sense. It really underlines how little real choice there actually is in that state. Now, here's where things get, I think, really insightful, especially when we think about human connection.
Okay.
Our material points out another powerful truth. Addiction is not goodwill.
Goodwill.
Yeah. When you think about it, addiction fundamentally insulates a person, cuts them off from people, places, things, anything outside their own really constricted world of getting, using, and finding ways to keep that cycle going.
It's like an all-consuming bubble.
Totally. I like wearing noise-canceling headphones to a party.
Yeah.
You're physically there, maybe, but you're utterly cut off from the actual connection.
That's a vivid image, that bubble. And as the illness progresses, the source says individuals actually become increasingly hostile, resentful, self-concerned.
Wow.
They consciously or maybe unconsciously just cut off all outside interests. It creates this kind of solitary confinement, even if they're physically surrounded by people.
That sounds incredibly lonely.
It is. And they live in fear and suspicion of the very people they might actually depend on for basic needs.
Wow.
And this isn't just about personal feelings. It touches every single area of life. Anything not completely familiar starts to feel alien, dangerous to the person in active addiction.
So their world just shrinks.
It shrinks dramatically, smaller and smaller, until isolation becomes its ultimate goal. And this pervasive isolation, this cutting off from genuine human connection, from shared purpose, it might well be the true nature of the disorder itself.
That's a profound thought, that the isolation itself is core to it.
Yeah. Perhaps the core of the illness isn't just the substance or the behavior, but this deep self-imposed separation from everything else.
That's a really chilling thought, actually, that isolation itself could be the goal. So, okay, what does this all mean for the big picture then? Our sources sum it up with a rather stark, yet I think undeniable conclusion. Addiction is not a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
The core statement here is the sick, self-seeking, self-centered, and self-enclosed world of the addict hardly qualifies as a way of life. It's pretty blunt, right? But it really drives the point home.
It truly does. And the severity of that statement, it's something we should probably all just pause on for a second.
Yeah.
At best, maybe this existence is a way to survive for a little while, like a holding pattern in a very dark room.
Right.
But even in this limited existence, the material makes it crystal clear. It is ultimately a way of despair, destruction, and tragically, death.
That's heavy.
It is. And when you think about what a way of life truly entails, things like growth, connection, purpose, meaningful interaction, contributing to something larger than yourself.
Yeah, all the good stuff.
All the good stuff. It becomes abundantly clear how utterly addiction falls short. It doesn't build, it erodes, it doesn't connect, it isolates, it certainly isn't living. It's, well, merely existing in a very, very dark place.
It's such a powerful contrast. So if addiction is defined so clearly by what it isn't, not freedom, not goodwill, not a way of life, then that really begs the question, doesn't it? What does a meaningful life or recovery actually look like? What fills that profound void that addiction leaves behind?
And that's the crucial question, isn't it?
Yeah.
The source connects the dots beautifully here. It states that any lifestyle seeking spiritual fulfillment seems to demand the very things missing in addiction: freedom, goodwill, creative action, and personal growth.
Ah, okay. So the opposites.
Exactly. These become the absolute foundation for what is possible. So maybe we should explore each of these, because they really are the antidotes, if you will, to the emptiness of active addiction.
Yeah, let's definitely dive into those antidotes. So freedom first. What does true freedom look like in this context?
Okay, so first, with freedom, life transforms. It becomes a meaningful, changing, advancing process. It allows you to look forward with, you know, a reasonable expectancy.
Hope, maybe.
Yeah, hope for a better, richer realization of your desires, a greater fulfillment of your personal self. And this isn't just some fleeting feeling. This freedom, it's kept and it's expanded through daily practice.
Daily practice, how so?
Well, this daily practice is, in itself, a form of creative action that actually never ends. It's a continuous, dynamic process of growth and expansion, kind of like a muscle that gets stronger with consistent, purposeful exercise.
I like that analogy. Okay, so that's freedom. What about goodwill? How does that fit into the picture of recovery?
Then there's goodwill. Goodwill is presented as an action, something you do that inherently includes others besides yourself.
Right, moving beyond the self.
Exactly. It's a way that considers others as important in their own lives as we feel we are in ours. Our source points out that goodwill is really the beginning of all spiritual growth, and it organically leads to affection and love in all our actions.
Uh-huh.
It's about building bridges, not burning them, you know? Recognizing the common humanity in others, which, funnily enough, often makes you feel more human yourself.
So it's not just about stopping the negative, but actively cultivating the positive in your relationships.
Okay, that leads us to personal growth. How does that unfold here?
Right. So moving on to personal growth, we find that it uses both freedom and goodwill, but in cooperation with other people.
Ah, the interpersonal part.
Yes. The realization dawns that, well, we can't live alone. That personal growth is also intrinsically interpersonal growth. We need each other.
Makes sense.
And in order to find better balance in life, we're kind of prompted to examine our personal, social, and spiritual values alongside our material values. It's about finding that equilibrium.
Which takes work.
It does. But this kind of evaluation is something maturity seems to demand, right? It's a sign of a life becoming more whole and balanced, moving out of that self-enclosed bubble into a truly connected existence.
Okay. And finally, creative action. That one sounds maybe a little abstract. What does that mean in practical terms for someone rebuilding their life? Yeah, it can sound abstract, but it's not really. Creative action isn't some mysterious procedure. Though fundamentally, it is an inside job. It's about rebuilding or reintegrating our, well, disordered and fractured personalities.
Yeah.
Often, it simply means listening to those little hunches, those intuitive feelings we get, things we think might benefit others or ourselves, and then actually acting on them spontaneously without overthinking it into oblivion.
Ah, spontaneity again. The opposite of that rigid control.
Exactly. This is where many basic principles of positive action become apparent. And it allows us to make decisions based on principles that have real value to us rather than just being driven by compulsion or fear.
Mm.
It's about taking those small positive steps forward, trusting your better instincts, and just seeing where they lead, which is, a massive shift from the monotonous rituals of addiction.
So, okay, putting it all together. How do these powerful concepts, freedom, goodwill, creative action, personal growth, how do they actually become tangible in someone's life, especially when they're moving away from that state you described as not a way of life? It sounds like such a monumental shift.
It is a monumental shift, absolutely. Yeah. And the source provides a really clear, stark contrast here. In active addiction, the only ends are presented pretty unflinchingly as insanity, institutions, and death.
Yeah, very stark.
But the message of hope is just as powerful. In recovery, through the help of a higher power and the steps of NA, anything is possible. Now, it's important, when the source mentions a higher power,
yes,
it clarifies this is understood individually by each person. It's not about forcing any specific dogma, but about finding strength in something beyond oneself, however you conceive that.
Okay, that's a key point.
And the steps of NA refer to a structured program, a path of recovery that guides individuals through this journey, often supported within what's called the fellowship, which is basically a supportive community of peers.
Right.
Exactly. It's about finding strength, not just within, but also in connection to something greater than yourself, and crucially, in community with others who understand.
And the service part.
Yes. When these goals, freedom, creative action, goodwill, when they're shown in service within that supportive community, and importantly, without seeking personal rewards, they bring about profound changes. Changes whose ends we often can't predict or even control.
Mm.
Service itself, in this context, is understood as a power greater than we. It holds immense meaning and transformative potential for everyone involved.
Wow. That really does reshape the understanding, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We've spent our time today taking a close look at addiction, not by, listing symptoms, but by defining what it isn't.
Right.
It's not freedom. It's not goodwill. And it's certainly not a way of life. But in that very definition of absence, we kind of uncover the profound possibilities of recovery, a path towards freedom, goodwill, creative action, and personal growth. So thinking about this, what stands out to you, our listener, about defining something by what it isn't? How does this framework maybe reshape your understanding of addiction, or perhaps even other challenges you might face in your own life?
It's a useful mental tool.
It really is. And here's maybe the final thought to chew on. If addiction is defined by what it robs us of spontaneity, genuine connection, purposeful living, then maybe true freedom isn't just the absence of restraint, but the active pursuit of connection, creative action, and growth.
I like that. Active pursuit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How might this framework apply beyond addiction to other areas where we might feel stuck or, unfulfilled in our own lives? It kind of urges us to consider what we might be missing rather than just what we want to get.
It truly is a powerful way to look at things. Understanding what something isn't can be a remarkably effective way to gain clarity and make genuine progress, not just in understanding addiction, but really in almost any area of our lives.
Yeah.
It gives you a clear target by showing you what to move away from just as much as what to move towards.
That's perfectly put. Well, thank you for taking a close look with us today. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep learning.